Donald, it's good to be with you.
Secretary Clinton, is that okay? Good. I want you to be very happy.
The central question in this election is really what kind of country we want to be and what kind of future we'll build together.
Our jobs are fleeing the country. They're going to Mexico. They're going to many other countries.
I call it trumped up, trickle down.
My tax cut is the biggest since Ronald Reagan.
You've taken business bankruptcy 6 times.
If I don't get there one way, I'm going to get to Pennsylvania Avenue enough.
Donald, I know you live in your own reality.
I don't think General Douglas MacArthur would like that too much.
I'm not going to make any excuses.
It's all words. It's all sound bites.
This is Debate Rewind from The Takeaway. Call us at 1-800-543-2543 to tell us what you think. And now here's John Hockenberry and Todd Zawilik.
It's not all sound bites. It was a billionaire hyperbole meets Washington veteran in 100 minutes of debate tonight. Hillary Clinton side by side with Donald Trump. You're listening to special coverage from Public Radio International and New York Public Radio and The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway, here with Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zawilik. We've witnessed an amazing debate. Todd?
The two candidates on the stage together for the first time with I can't wait to hear what the television ratings were expecting. What, 100 million viewers, biggest television broadcast since the Super Bowl or bigger than the Super Bowl. So voters really probably were watching this, and many of them maybe for the first time. And really contrast is what so much of this was about for me. I saw a lot of Hillary and Donald, much as I've seen them on the campaign trail. But John, when they're together on one stage, it's a completely different game, because it's not just about how you want to appear and what you want to say. It's everything is in relation to the person who's standing across from you, not to mention the split screen on television, every smirk, every sniffle, every sideways glance. So two candidates really inhabiting each other's persona, I thought, you know, in a way that's going to, you know, define a lot of the rest of this race.
Beyond style and beyond sort of debate points, this was an up-close electron microscope picture of a divide in America politically that we've been talking about for a year now. There's a sense of anger afoot in America. There's a sense of alienated people who don't feel a part of the political process. And there is a group of people who believe that they have solutions to make America better. We've experienced over that year serious racial problems. We've experienced issues associated with ISIS. And of course, we've experienced the slow growth in the U.S. economy, all issues in this debate. But the contrast between this divide of anger and this veteran politician is something that all of us will remember. We have your voices in this conversation over the next hour. You can call us at 1-800-543-2543. We want to hear from Trump supporters particularly. What were your expectations? Were those expectations realized? Hillary Clinton supporters, we of course want to hear from you as well. What did you think was the worst case scenario here? What do you think happened? And where do you think we go from here? What can they possibly do when the second debate takes place on October 9th, I believe? Donald in Jersey City, you're first up.
Oh, thank you. Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I thought Hillary did a fantastic job, and I'm very much reassured by it. I'm a GOP registered voter, but I can't vote for Trump because I don't think he has the kind of sense of reality, especially with regard to foreign policy and trade policy, that could be credible around the world.
So this is not a Republican thing. This is a Trump thing, right?
Oh, indeed, yeah. And the thing is, you know, I mean, I'm glad that Donald Trump feels good, you know, making people feel good when he talks to rallies and that kind of thing. But that's not what our politics is really about. It's about being qualified. And I don't think his learning curve is too great. That's what I think is the problem.
Donald, how long have you felt this way? Have you felt this way since the primaries, or was there a time when you considered Trump?
You know, I mean, I suppose I could have been a Jeb Bush supporter, except that, you know, he was the third Bush, and that was a little too much for almost everybody.
All right, Donald, thanks so much from Jersey City. We have a caller from Minnesota. Is from Orono? Did I say that right, Hannah? Is it Orono?
Go, Hannah, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment, listening to the debate tonight, that I would never have considered myself someone who would support Trump. But listening to everything he said, hearing him as an authentic individual person who really, like, got down to the idea of the conversations that were happening, and just feeling like he was really talking about what he believed, and then listening to Hillary and just being such a figurehead and such a puppet and just giving the answers that she felt were the right answers to get elected, I think was really eye-opening, and I never thought that I would feel that way about it.
And Hannah, is this the first time in this campaign that you've really felt that sense of authenticity and realness from Donald Trump and a sense of sort of stilted politician delivery from Hillary, as you put it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I don't have a television, and I haven't actually been really involved in what's happening, but just happened to be somewhere tonight.
That's interesting.
Where it was on and just watching it happen and just being like, this is actually an authentic, real response to these questions.
And how did you vote in the last election, Hannah?
Well, I voted for Obama.
You voted for Obama. Okay. So
I don't think it was a bad choice either.
No. Just asking just some details. So you've been listening for the last year and hearing through conversations with your friends and maybe on the news all about how, unusual and perhaps possibly unstable or controversial Donald Trump is. And when you tuned in tonight, you said, oh, my goodness, he seems pretty authentic to me. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's a very fair statement. I think I was really taking in the snippets and pieces that were put forward and the way that he has been represented by other people without actually looking at what his reality might be.
Hannah, there's one thing about this that makes me so curious when you talk about Donald Trump, and that's the way he's talked about women, referred to women, been quoted talking about women and treating women. Hillary Clinton raised it, really tried to highlight it towards the end of the debate. Some of his comments about women, calling them pigs or fat, or I think in one case, Miss Housekeeping to a Latina woman. Does that phase you at all? Does it give you pause? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think considering what I've seen, I think it's really easy to misrepresent individuals' quotes if you're not listening to their entire conversation.
And so you think this is a case of sort of political sloganing against Donald Trump that doesn't have any real truth behind it?
I think it's very possible, yeah. Right.
But is it also a kind of a boys will be boys sort of attitude that, yeah, people say that stuff all the time. There's no reason to focus on that?
I'm not really into a boys will be boys. I think women deserve a lot of respect. I think they're powerful people, and they need to be respected as individuals and not sexualized.
And you don't think Donald Trump could be accused of doing that?
I think he could be accused of it, but like I said, I think when you take an individual and you piece out parts of conversations and parts of comments, that you can create that, and you can make it look that way, and I don't know enough about him to say whether or not that's his real representation.
Well, we are so glad you tuned in to the debate tonight and got this fresh look at the candidates. And we're so glad that you called us at 800-543-2543. Hannah, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Let's go to Tess in Queens, right here in New York City. Tess?
So I thought Hillary Clinton came out on top. I think she laid a lot of breadcrumbs to beat Donald Trump, and I think he picked them right up just like she wanted to. However, I'm not really sure how much it's going to benefit her just based on the narrative that Donald Trump has kind of built since day one, that the media and everyone is against him and that, you know, it's slanted and it's biased. And I think that his supporters have really bought into that and they're kind of locked into that. I don't really know if this will change much for him.
So here's the thing, though, Tess. You're probably right that it won't change much. Hillary's not going to pluck any Donald Trump voters from his ranks, right? I mean, they're pretty hardcore for Trump, and I think it's safe to say hardcore against Hillary. That number tends to end at 42%. So let's say there's 10% of the electorate out there who are undecided or unsure or ready to go either way or maybe willing to vote Trump but uneasy, queasy, just not sure. View those people, those sort of those others undecided 10%. How do you think they might react?
I mean, I hope I hope they react and go go with Hillary, because I think she demonstrated her ability as a president. But, you know, I seeing what's happened over the past year and few months now, I've become less and less confident, unfortunately.
Hey, Tess, let me run some reactions by you of listeners around the country who have sent us text messages, okay? El Paso, Texas said, Hillary had better go after the Bernie voters in earnest because Trump did better than expected and we could be in real trouble. Do you buy that?
I don't. I didn't see anything that really shone. I felt like he kind of fell into a lot of her traps, and I think she outshone him.
One more thing. Portland, Oregon said, Lester Holt needs to do a better job moderating. Trump dominates Hillary's time by overtaking her. The audience can't hear what she is saying or what Trump is saying. What did you think of Lester Holt?
I am really aggressively nodding my head as I hear that tweet, because I completely agree. I thought Lester Holt tried to interject, but he really didn't have a command of his voice. He didn't really kind of stop things. He let people go. There was that initial back and forth when it came to tax returns, and I felt like he should have jumped on that way sooner. So, yeah, I was a little disappointed.
Although, Tess, thanks for your call, Tess. I will say, in defense of Lester Holt, if I may, he had a hard time reining in, especially Donald Trump, keeping him on time and on task, although fairly dogged in coming back to some of the questions that he wanted answered, like when he asked Trump about his tax returns and Trump went off on a tangent, he brought him back to tax returns. When he asked Donald Trump about being a birther for those many 6 years and peddling in this racist lie that's poisoned the country, as Hillary Clinton said, Trump went off on a tangent on that. And Lester Holt reeled that back in. So maybe not a perfect moderator performance, but for all of the criticism of other moderators, especially Matt Lauer from NBC, from the National Security Forum that took place, it seemed like Lester Holt was prepared to try and get some answers and hold people to account here.
All I will say is Howie Kurtz, among some others who evaluated Holt, said that he focused way more on Trump than he did on Clinton.
Howard Kurtz would say that.
He would say that. But anyway, that's the sort of original spin there, just putting Holt to rest. Daniel in New York City, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Well, as I said, I have a kind of very emotional response because I was listening to it on the radio and my daughter was watching it on the live stream. And over again, I heard Trump sort of dismissing pretty much every issue and saying the same thing over and over again, while Hillary Clinton was addressing the question and talking about what she would do and how she perceived the situation. I felt that Trump was inevitably sexist, racist, and not really taking into consideration to whom he was speaking as a woman. I just felt that it was so disrespectful. And as I said, mostly an emotional response as a person listening to this dialogue between these two people.
And so, Daniel, who got more of this impression? You said you were listening on the radio. Your daughter was watching video where there's so much, you know, obviously you can see the postures and the glances and the physicality of the whole thing. How did your opinion differ from maybe your daughter's? What were her impressions?
Well, she was quite vocal. She was laughing at what Trump said. Did you hear what he said? You should see what he's doing. But I really wanted to listen to what they were saying. And so that was why I chose to do what I, even though we were in the same room. I was surprised. I always felt that Trump went for the lowest common denominator, sort of the no information, just a gut reaction, try to get a reaction from the crowd as if he were talking to I don't know what. I was really disturbed by how low he went in terms of his responses, yeah, as opposed to the intelligent, responsive, informative responses that Hillary gave. And I heard one of your other listeners saying it was just a pat response, a pat political response. And that surprises me, even at my age.
You know, one of the questions here, Daniel, and thank you for your call from New York City so much, is one of the questions here is whether rally Trump, right? Whether base Trump, whether primary Trump, successful Trump up until now, John, can translate to presidential Trump now that he is face to face with Hillary Clinton, at least for these three debates that he has to participate in, whether he can transmogrify that character from the rally podium to a debate stage,
or if he even wants to. A short cab ride, perhaps, from where Daniel spoke to us is Norm, here listening on WNYC right here in Manhattan. Norm, what do you think of what happened tonight?
Yeah, hi. First of all, I think Trump is a monster. However, I think that Hillary did not do a really good job in pressing him on many things. The birther issue, she should have said point blank to him, yes, Mr. Trump, after 2011, you kept promulgating this idea, 2013, 2014. She just didn't, go after him on things that were kind of obvious. She should have also attacked him and say, you're not giving us any specifics on anything. That's what other people are saying, surrogates. She should be saying that he does not use specifics. She should have said that to him point blank. And she let him talk a lot, which, I mean, in a way was effective because it shows how, I think, crazy he is. But some people think that is his enthusiasm picked up and sincerity. That's the problem. One of the problems, he was a little too passive. And I think she, like I say, I'm so frightened that he might win.
All right. So Norm thinks Trump is a monster, yet nevertheless, Hillary did a bad job tonight by not taking him on even more aggressively. Jordan in Hawaii, what do you think?
Hey, thanks for having me. I think Trump was a little bit more disorganized tonight. I'm a Trump supporter, and it seemed like he was kind of all over the place, not really on his game, and Hillary seemed a little bit more presidential, in my opinion.
That's quite an allowance from you, Jordan, as a Trump supporter. Was that disappointing for you, and what exactly did you see in Donald Trump and his performance that made you think he was all over the place and not focused?
Definitely a lot of interrupting on his part. I was hoping he wouldn't interrupt as much, kind of, if you appeal to the intellectuals on the Democratic side, I feel like that portrays a negative light.
I'm not sure I've seen Donald Trump appeal to intellectualism yet. In this entire campaign. You might have been hoping for something unrealistic there, Jordan. I don't know.
Jordan, what's the chance you'd stay home after your impression of this debate and not vote?
There's kind of a good chance for me. I mean, personally, Trump does have some things I don't like about him. I am for more Republican ideals. I think that's why I would vote for him over Hillary. So that's my opinion.
All right. Jordan, thanks for the call from Hawaii. I think we have time for one more call before we reach a break. Linda, you're in Princeton, New Jersey, listening on WNYC. What did you think about what you saw?
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Yes, good evening. I'm 64 years old. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I will vote for Mrs. Clinton, unwillingly, I might add. However, in my view, she wiped the floor with him tonight. Fine. He, as the previous caller said, was all over the place. However, if Mrs. Clinton wins and becomes president of this country, there are tens of millions of people who are Trump supporters. Some of her sarcastic and cutting remarks toward him. He's got a rather ineffectual personality, in case no one's noticed it. And I heard the program. I don't have a television for 16 years. She is going to have to do a lot of work. She offended millions of Trump supporters tonight with the way she made her points. There's another way of doing it that does not rob people of their precious dignity.
So, Linda, you felt as though Trump got into the deplorable, or Hillary Clinton got into the deplorable zone there in her tone. Well, thanks so much for calling, Linda. Linda, listening to us in Princeton. You can listen to us anywhere in the country and call if you want to join this conversation. Special coverage of the post-debate moment here in America. Call us at 1-800-543-2543. With Todd Zwillick, I'm John Hockenberry of The Takeaway.
Is Debate Rewind from The Takeaway. Call us at 1-800-543-2543 to tell us what you think. This is Debate Rewind from The Takeaway. Call us at 1-800-543-2543 to tell us what you think.
The audience here in the room has agreed to remain silent so that we can focus on what the candidates are saying.
Secretary Clinton, thank you. Mr. Trump, the same question to you.
We cannot do it any longer, Lester.
Back to the question, though. How do you bring back, specifically bring back, jobs?
All right, you have 2 minutes on the same question to defend tax increases on the wealthiest Americans, Secretary Clinton. Mr. Trump, a lot of these are judgment questions. You had supported the war in Iraq before the invasion. What makes your judgment?
I did not support the war in Iraq.
2002.
That is a mainstream media nonsense.
Kind of the voice there of Lester Holt from NBC Nightly News. The dogged Lester Holt, let's say.
Getting Super Bowl ratings tonight.
And the pressure was on for Lester Holt to be the best darn moderator these debates have ever seen. I'm Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent for The Takeaway. With me, of course, the host of The Takeaway, John Hockenberry, bringing you through the rewind of tonight's very first presidential showdown between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. 100 million viewers, right? That's what they said. Well, I guess we'll get the ratings later on.
At least.
At least, right? And probably more. Lester Holt, you heard in our setup there, Lester Holt trying to get some answers out of the candidates, especially Donald Trump, who might have did go far afield on a couple of questions about the Iraq War or on his tax returns or on race. Maybe Lester Holt had a hard time reining in the candidates when they were talking over each other, keeping them on time. But, John, he did seem like the kind of guy who was after real answers and fact checks, and certainly sensitive about the criticism that Matt Lauer got when he did not fact check some of these statements that were given.
Well, I used to work with Lester Holt at NBC, and I have to say, you know, he's a very measured, steady anchor. Always, that's his signature, and yeah. He's done a great job on Nightly News. But I think the job he had tonight was extraordinary. I mean, the last 2 weeks, all the comedy channels, all the commentary on Huffington Post and in the editorial pages has been about this equivalence fallacy,
right,
that the media has taken, that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are somehow equivalent and that you equate them as just sort of on the one hand and on the other hand, and that it benefits Donald Trump. And here – Lester Holt has to sit in that chair and essentially endorse that equivalency. But when Donald Trump departs from it, or Hillary Clinton departs from it for that matter, he has to jump in and try to remind people that, this is far afield.
So,
and it was a very, very difficult job. I mean, on some points, there was specific fact checking that Lester Holt had to do. And you saw that mostly with Donald Trump. And with Hillary Clinton, I think it was tough for him not to behave as though she's the Washingtonian I know and he's the Donald Trump billionaire who I don't have a clue. And that's tough.
It's really tough. And what also makes it tough is not only this cry of false equivalency between the candidates that has come largely from the left, but then if you adhere to sort of a new standard of fact-checking, right, as probably the journalist in Lester Holt feels like he's responding to a whole strategy of new expectation setting from Democrats who felt like Hillary Clinton wasn't either treated fairly in previous confrontations or at least the national security forum or other interviewers didn't hold Donald Trump to task enough, and that's not fair because he really doesn't know anything about this stuff. He's in a fact-free world, and we have to draw him out on these things. So he wants to do the journalistic thing. People are demanding the journalistic thing, I call it. And at the same time, he thinks, gosh, am I playing Hillary's game here by going tougher on him?
Well, you know? Love to be a fly on the wall of that skull. Yes, Lester Holt. What do you think of Lester Holt? He's not running for president, but Donald Trump is.
A lot of people probably wish he was.
Hillary Clinton. Call us at 1-800-543-2543. We'd love to know what you think of the 100 minutes of amazing political confrontation that took place tonight. Mike in Hawaii, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
So what do you think?
I'm a national security representative and person of the intelligence community. access to classified information. I just feel like Hillary Clinton's a very untrustworthy person and has a horrible track record. And it's just deeply alarming, concerning that, you know, for a person like that who was part of a Washington elite, who are basically held beyond reproach, have an opportunity to be a center stage and to be able to have to run for not only run for president, but continue to have access to classified information when they've proven themselves unworthy and incapable of being able to manage that information.
What is your classified status at this point, Mike?
Top secret.
Top secret. Okay. So you worked formerly with the National Security Establishment, or you worked for a subcontractor?
I'm currently a federal employee.
Okay. So the email situation really offends you with Hillary Clinton, but what do you make of when Donald Trump says we should have taken the oil, talking about, for instance, the situation in Iraq? As a national security expert, what do you think of the implications of speaking like that about the Middle East?
What exactly are you asking?
Well, he said, go in there and take the oil. That was should have been the mission in Iraq.
Well, I'm not endorsing Donald Trump because of his particular viewpoints or, you know, however he makes his political statements, a lot of which are charged himself. I'm primarily just focusing on the candidacy of a particular individual who has a good track record for, you know, handling classified information. And here we are, we're trying to determine whether or not she has the eligibility and is professional enough to act in that position.
Mike, you're familiar with this world, I guess, if you have top secret clearance. And one of the things that's always interested me about the email story is that Hillary Clinton is a person who's obviously had clearances for a lot of her career. She's been involved in sensitive discussions and sensitive communications at the very highest level as Secretary of State and on a classified level as Senator, no doubt. She was a member of the Foreign Relations Committee. So given the breadth of that career and all of the things that she's been involved in, and then the issue of setting up the private server, is that one mistake, that one move, whether it's to avoid journalists or hide her emails or the things she's called a mistake and she wouldn't do it again, that for you is disqualifying even in the context of the rest of her career and all the many, many hours she sat in the Situation Room and everything else?
Well, bringing back to what I said earlier is that, you know, this is part of a Washington political elite establishment. I work with tons of men and women who have worked from the ground up, you know, out of college or not having a college degree, coming through the military. And it's almost like the handling of this information is embedded into you. It's drilled very hard from the moment that you have access to this type of stuff. So it's not feasible that someone who is a leader in these types of positions to be able to say, you know what, my employees, they have to handle this information with due diligence. However, I am part of a different establishment where I'm a political appointee in this position. I'm not someone who earned it through, you know, years of subject matter expertise and knowledge.
Got it, Mike. That's good. No, that's good. Can I ask you one question? Who did you vote for in the last election in 2012 or 2008?
I voted for Obama.
Okay. Thanks so much, Mike. We really appreciate your call. Thanks so much for calling at 1-800-543-2543. Jim in Brick Township, New Jersey. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I had thought towards the end, the one remark regarding housing, I thought Trump really was treading on thin ice when he was talking about equality regarding admissions to a club. He made one friendly remark to Muslims in regard to their admission to a club. I thought it was really a pathetic response. But I was wondering if he was trying to drum up something with regard to the 800 citizens who were made citizens inappropriately. And I Googled that and I Yahoo searched it. And there were, I think, out of 148,000 due to some undigitized fingerprints, but I saw that a lot of the caches that came up on YouTube, or rather on Yahoo, were rather dubious quality groups that had the Tea Party in the name. And I was just wondering if he was just trying to throw that out at the very end. I hadn't heard about it.
Yeah,
apparently,
Jim, well, I'll tell you one thing that really struck me, and you brought it up at the beginning, was when Donald Trump was talking about his club in Palm Beach. This was in the context of a discussion about race, and he seemed at one point to want to take credit for the fact that he allowed minorities or African Americans in his club, as though this is something, you know, that you get kudos for, and not something that's not only required under the law, but also just the moral thing.
Well, it's kind of like the against police judge that he brought up. That was my favorite moment.
That particular remark threw you for a loop for sure.
Well, it was just like the against police judge.
A very against police judge.
Yeah. The pro-Muslim club. I don't know. We can't have fun here. We're not allowed to have fun here. But
too late.
Yeah, exactly. Jim, thanks so much for calling. We really appreciate it. 1-800-543-2543 is the number. Carla, you're in Hawaii. That's Obama country. What's up?
Oh, my God. How did I get you? It's Obama country, but I voted for Reagan. And one of the things I cannot figure out is why, when this whole thing first came up about the emails, I remember very clearly Colin Powell saying that everyone used those type of servers in public office in those days because it was a long time ago. And not like it is today. You know, there wasn't as much concern about it being hacked. I don't think the word was even used. And the other thing is, I voted for Reagan, but I lived with a man who was a narcissist, and I can tell you they're very dangerous people. And I am just horrified at the fact that this man has actually gotten as far as he has. They're so conniving, and they're so good at what they do. They're con artists. They're so good at what they do, but they're so dangerous.
You got to be a little careful with armchair diagnosis, I think. Although, if you've lived with one, maybe it's credible.
Carla, you keep on thinking that about narcissists. I don't know who you're talking about, but I totally am with you there.
If you have ever been at the back end of it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not pretty.
All right, Carla, thanks a lot for
your
call.
That's a book title, The Back End of a Narcissist.
I love
Election
it.
2016 in America. Yes, indeed. Tim in Greenwood, Indiana. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Go for it.
No, NAFTA. How can she sit there and say what her husband did for NAFTA? After all these all these RCA for one in Bloomington, Indiana.
What's she gonna do? I mean, that was in 1992, and she can't throw Bill under the bus now. I mean, we've been under NAFTA for 30 years. What else is she gonna do?
Well, how could she sit there and still support it?
Yeah. Well, she doesn't have a choice at this point, I think.
How has NAFTA affected you, do you think, Tim?
Indiana alone, RCA, they left. Thousands of people in Indiana lost their jobs. I think Whirlpool's another one. In Evansville, went to, you know, Mexico, wherever they went.
Carrier, right? Carrier air conditioning?
Yeah. I mean, there's tons. That just lost me right there when she still supported NAFTA. What, 30 years?
Tim, did Hillary have a chance at you before the NAFTA issue came up? Were you willing to vote Hillary before
that? Yeah, I was. I was still up in it. I mean, I'm not a Trump supporter all the way, but, I mean, how could you sit and support all these companies wanting to lead the country? And that's the thing I like about Trump is that he's trying to bring all that back to America and thousands of jobs.
So, Tim, does it bug you? You know, one of the raps on Trump is that he's hit the right note with so many millions of Americans on trade and lost jobs. He's wearing a bright blue Trump tie on stage tonight. Those are made in China. So many of the things that he sells with his brand name, capital T Trump, back in this country are made overseas, Singapore, China, Burma, everywhere else. Yeah. Does that matter to you?
Well, sure it does. I mean, I am like his logo. I mean, make America great again. And that's what we need to do somehow, some way. And the politicians that we have today in office is just like the one caller said earlier, Hillary was just like a typical politician. She said what American wanted to hear.
But Tim,
that's just the way I felt.
You say you're not all the way for Trump. What does that mean? And what's the chance that you might actually just stay home?
There's a good chance, a real good chance. I mean, I like it. You know, Trump, I mean, to get somebody in the office, we need somebody different. But I don't think it needs to be Trump. But I just wish we had some better candidates to choose from.
Well, Tim, I feel your pain. Thanks so much for calling. 800-543-2543. So the deal breaker.
And here's the thing. Tim's in Indiana. Trump's got it in the bag. I want to know how many Tims there are in Pennsylvania, right? I want to know how many people who would vote Trump, but, John, I might stay home. If there are enough of those people in Pennsylvania, it's potentially lights out for Donald Trump as he tries to win that state, his only path to victory. That's just a little bit of strategizing for you, but Indiana's not really in play, but boy, Pennsylvania is. So it's just fascinating for me. But let's go to WNYC here in New York, from the heartland to the big city. Justin, you're on the air with John Hockenberry and me.
Hi, good evening, John and Todd. How's it going?
Go right ahead. Great.
I was actually kind of ambivalent. To be quite honest, I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I kind of look at both candidates as kind of pick your poison, right? And I'm also what you can categorize as a millennial. But I studied international relations and sociology, and I studied law. So I feel like my perspective is somewhat not what is perceived as Instagram, nor do I have any of this. Anyhow, just to give you a perspective and kind of some context, so I was looking at this kind of trying to not try to do a vote casting for the intention as kind of a protest. And so I really tried to kind of be objective, and I would have to echo both sentiments of, Donald Trump is clearly a megalomaniac in some capacity and a sociopath, one could argue, or brilliant. And Hillary Clinton is indicative of what a politician we've always seen. And I have to say, kind of lean towards Hillary. There's a couple more debates.
Justin, it's amazing what you just said there. I mean, you are the golden prize of this campaign now. The millennial voter, Hillary needs you and people like you if she's going to lock this down. You say a sociopath, a megalomaniac, Hillary Clinton, the politician we've always seen, and I guess maybe Hillary. I hear that, and I think, God, it's amazing that you could characterize these two people in those terms and not be decided.
Oh, no, of course. And
Justin, I'm not buying it. You're going to vote for Hillary. I can tell.
I mean, I'm probably going to vote for Hillary. But to be honest, if you talk to my friend who's in Italy, and we communicate quite often about this, so he's actually, his father is based in Venice, in Vicenza, anyhow. We always go back and forth. And I was truly going to just vote for the sake of me being an American. And also, let me preface, I come from a mother who is an immigrant, and she's from Central America, specifically Nicaragua. And I think there's a lot of kind of, anti-immigration. This country is, if you're not an immigrant, then you're not an American. I think people really need to understand this, no matter how you look. I think if we really look at the facts, and I think NPR specifically had a posting from the Pew Research Report about demographics and unauthorized immigration, it's been stabilized for half a decade.
No, that's true. Justin, you've got a big experience ahead of you as a millennial voting for presidents and local races and maybe being a part of some change in America. I would encourage you to stay with the process and vote, whatever it is. When we come back, we're going to talk about race for the rest of the hour here on Debate Rewind, a look at what just happened, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump face to face.
This is Debate Rewind from The Takeaway. Call us at 1-800-543-2543 to tell us what you think.
Mr. Trump, for 5 years, you perpetuated a false claim that the nation's first black president was not a natural-born citizen.
I didn't fail. I got him to give the birth certificate.
Well, just listen to what you heard, but it can't be dismissed that easily.
We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, it worked very well in New York.
And so we need to do a better job of working again with the communities, faith communities, business communities, as well as the police to try to deal with this problem.
Our inner cities, African Americans, Hispanics, are living in hell.
Some excerpts from the debate tonight. Hi, this is John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway, and we are presenting for you a Debate Rewind program, taking a look at the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Those were excerpts from what we thought of as the race discussion. At least those were the questions that Lester Holt asked. But if you listen carefully to the answers, it was mostly talking about crime and law and order, and there was certainly the talk about the birther debate that Donald Trump was very much a part of, and he accused Hillary Clinton of being a part of as well. I heard in this, Todd, and we want to get your calls at 1-800-543-2543 on this or any other subject that you heard in the debate. I heard when the subject of race originally came up, and it was a discussion and a question linked to the shootings in Charlotte, the shootings in other places around the country, Tulsa, most recently, but also talking about Ferguson. And I heard actually both candidates very hesitant about directly addressing the issue of violence against African Americans in the United States.
I agree with you.
I heard Hillary saying, we have to respect police. It was a lot of talk about police. Then when it shifted over to Donald Trump, the police support me, the police support me. And then he equated blacks living in the inner city in some sort of 70s nomenclature of you know, they're in the ghetto or something, which was very just distasteful and out of touch with the whole discussion, which I think has been very enlightened in America in many places post-Ferguson in thinking about what are the myths in America. What are the problems that we have? I think Hillary Clinton was much better on race when she was talking about incarceration and when she was talking about the birther debate. But I think in general, you saw two white candidates hesitant to really address the African-American experience. That's my impression.
And from Donald Trump, look, I heard the exact same thing that I've heard from him this entire campaign, which is really no facility to talk about race. I think in a way that many minorities, African-Americans in particular, but also Latinos and other people of color would find authentic in any way, sort of talking over them. You've seen a strategy in the Trump campaign up until now of talking at black folks or about black folks in a way that's not for black folks, but in a way to make white folks more comfortable with Donald Trump's campaign.
Well,
right?
He said that African-Americans appreciated him bringing up the birther question,
right,
because he forced Barack Obama to put it to rest.
He did him a favor.
That's delusional.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just simply delusional.
It is.
In St. Paul, Minnesota, welcome to this Takeaway Debate Rewind program.
Thank you, John, for taking my call.
What's up? What's on your mind?
I was actually listening to the debate on the radio. I'm at work, and I'm a truck driver. I'm on the road, and I was listening to it, and it comes down to experience and foreign policy. I'm also an immigrant. I have no any particular allegiance to any party. I did voted both Republican and Democratic in the past, but at this point, I'm leaning towards more to Hillary because simply the experience she has in her foreign policy, she seems to know a lot more than just what Mr. Trump said. No offense to Mr. Trump, but it's just my opinion.
Adam, it sounds like Donald Trump didn't lose you a long time ago with the way he talks about immigrants, which a lot of people have found insensitive, at least, and absolutely vilifying at worst.
You're absolutely right. I'm also a Muslim immigrant. I've lived in this country for 27 years. I voted Bush Sr., I voted. I did vote for parties in the past, but it really depends the issues and what they're addressing. And to me, I really watch that because those things are important to me and affects a lot of the a great part of the community that I'm from, and it's important that we vote a candidate that at least addresses our concerns.
Adam, I really appreciate you calling us to share your experience in this election and what you saw in this debate. We can stay in Minnesota, though, and go to Gwyneth, who's also in the, what is it, the land of 10,000 lakes, right? Gwyneth, go ahead.
Hello. I really enjoyed the debate, but I was kind of disappointed with Hillary Clinton because there were two pretty obvious tripwires for Trump that she didn't take advantage of.
What were they?
One of them was the idea of regulations, that her plans are full of regulations. And this was in a segment about, you know, the economy. When we were talking about an economy that had been tanked by, you know, his class of robber barons.
I don't know if she really missed an opportunity there, though. I mean, are most voters sitting around thinking about the scourge of regulations? I mean, I know a lot of conservative Republicans and certainly a lot of business owners don't like a lot of regulation, but I'm not sure that this is the most salient attack point that we heard.
Probably not, but I could use more regulations, and honestly, he's the kind of guy who brags about, you know, exploiting lack of regulation. So
what was the second tripwire?
The second tripwire was this idea that she has changed positions on things like the TPP, and honestly, she's made a kind of a stance of changing positions when she's gotten more information, when she's gotten to know people. As a, you know, as a queer person, the idea that she's changed position on same-sex marriage, the idea that she's changed position on the TPP when she's gotten more information, that's a little bit more mature than changing positions like lying in the way that a child does, like denying things that are obviously fact-checked the way that Trump does.
All right, Gwyneth, that's great. It's great to hear you. And it's interesting because on one level, there's a strategic question here. The question really is, do you allow Trump to just hang himself with the way that he sets out those tripwires, or do you challenge him on each one? I think that must have been a strategic question for the debate. And the Hillary camp pretty much decided to say, let Trump talk. And that's what they did. And you can decide for yourself whether Hillary lost a lot of opportunities. Gwyneth obviously thinks so. Kim, in Indiana, Northwest Indiana, that is. So where are you, in Gary?
Yes, right next to Gary, Chesterton, that whole area, not far from Chicago.
All right. So what's on your mind, Kim?
Well, I was a little reluctant to listen to the debate. I listened to it on the radio because I've been kind of disappointed in the whole narrative. It's all been about what Trump says, and, you know, he's dominated the conversation. And I, you know, was a Bernie supporter and voted for Bernie in the primaries and have been slow to come on to the Hillary camp. But tonight I was really pleased with how she did. I thought she really came clean and showed us who she was. She did let Trump kind of hang himself several times, which is great. And she took the high road, you know, quoting Michelle Obama, that was brilliant, to say, you know, she's going to take the high road along with her. And I think she really showed us, you know, where she's going with this campaign.
All right, Kim, we're going to move on to another caller, but I just want to ask you, so the likelihood that you would have stayed home because you're a Bernie supporter, that's gone down. You're more likely to vote now.
That's exactly right.
All right, Ralph from Minnesota, you're on the air.
Hi, you guys. You know, I'm a full Trump supporter, and part of the we're fed up is against the media, and you two guys included, I mean, in a small way. I mean, I'm listening to you, and obviously your biases come through. I mean, have you admitted up front that you're anti-Trump people?
I can answer that question for you, Ralph, if you'd like me to, and I'll try to do it briefly. It's not a question of bias for this journalist, but this election is unlike any I've ever covered in my entire life.
I can hear your anti-Trump bias seep through.
Ralph, would you like an answer to your question?
Yeah, but you're going on. You're not really answering.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you one right now. I am not pro-Hillary. I've never been pro any candidate in my life, and I never will be. But this election has one candidate who is a normal, flawed, maybe bad in some ways, dishonest in some ways, but a normal candidate, and another candidate who is aberrant, who is endeavoring to upend political, cultural, and societal norms that have been earned in this country over 150 or 200 years. And that has been my issue for a lot of this election, to answer your question.
Okay. Like, one little thing that was said, like the oil. Someone said, you know, Trump said, go in and take the oil. No, I'm sorry, back up. He did not say that. We waged war. No. We went to war with Iraq. We were already in.
No, Ralph. Let's Trump, calmly talk about this. I know you're upset.
Trump maintained, take the oil as long as we're there. But you guys, look how you,
but don't you understand? When,
the word
Ralph,
you use, betray your anti-Trump attitudes. Go in and take the oil.
Ralph.
He said, as long as we're there, take the oil.
Ralph, listen.
This thing about ties, he makes his ties are made in China. Any business person lowers their costs unless there's something ethical involved, like child labor.
We didn't mention anything about his ties. Ralph, let's focus on the oil for just a second. He's not advocating take the oil while we're there.
Yes,
he's advocating taking the natural resources of another country,
excuse
whether we're there
me.
Or not. The U.S. would never do that.
As long as we're there. He said send in troops to protect the area and take the oil, take it over, as long as we're there.
But that's against
I'm not
the Geneva Convention, that's against
the
United Nations.
It's a war crime.
Arguing the way you guys couch it, like go in and take the oil. No, he said as long as we're there. He don't want to go in the first place. Back to the ties. Any business person cuts their labor costs to make profit.
Ralph, we didn't talk about ties, so I don't want to waste any time on this. But look, if you think that we are biased, I'm sensitive to that, and I respect your opinion on it. I have real problems with Donald Trump. I mean, I think that American democracy can support his election as president. I think we'll be fine if he's elected as president. I don't support it. You're right. But I'm not biased against him, and I'm not trying to trash him or bring him down in this discussion. Let's go to Josh in Louisville, Kentucky. Josh, what's up?
Hey, thanks for having me on. I was calling to say I'm a lifelong Republican, pretty hardcore when it comes to some values. I'm getting a PhD in theology at a Baptist seminary. But if I vote in this election, it's going to be to vote to keep Trump out. He lost me a long time ago. And you mentioned earlier thoughts on the moderator tonight. And my thoughts so far have been not necessarily fact-checking, but fact-finding. He's basically building his own straw man arguments that just need to be lit on fire.
Josh.
What I would like to see is, if there's time in a debate, a moderator asking him to use fewer adjectives and more facts about his ideas.
Josh, I keyed in on one thing that you said there, which was, if I vote, if. It's a dilemma for you. Does this mean that voting anti-Trump might force you to vote for Hillary in a way that makes you queasy?
Well, voting for Hillary, I mean, if I vote for her, it'll be keep Trump out, and honestly, voting for her will go against a lot of what I hold important and valuable, but I'm almost to the point where it's more important just to use a vote to keep him away from that office.
30 seconds. Josh, what's the GOP going to do?
I have no idea. They're going to have to either find themselves or become a tagline in American politics.
That was fantastic. Josh, thank you so much for calling. Taher in Salt Lake City, you're on the air and probably our last caller tonight. What's up?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. I was just calling. My dad is an immigrant from Iran. I'm a first-generation American Iranian. I grew up with a Muslim father, but grew up American. And it's really disheartening to hear Trump with all of his rhetoric about Islam and things like that. And, it kind of drives me nuts when people try to vilify Hillary and say that she's done all these bad things. But then you look at what Trump says about women and Muslims and immigrants and things like that, and nobody seems to hold him to that standard.
Tahir, you know, Donald Trump does say all these things, but then it makes me wonder how you feel about the way maybe a lot of people in this country view you, because he has the support of millions of people, not for just this issue, for lots of other reasons too, so let's not boil it down to one thing, but people hear these messages, maybe anti-woman, anti-Muslim, and on some level it's okay with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, you know, after September 11th happened, my entire life changed. I grew up here. I'm an American citizen. I was born in Washington, D.C. Went to school. I pay my taxes. I'm a good citizen, productive. But I am categorized every time I go to the airport or somebody sees my license and they see my name because I have an Iranian name. You know, I mean, I don't have a normal name for most Americans.
You have a normal name, Tahir. Don't say that. Look, are you going to vote? You going to vote this fall? We've got to go.
Yeah, I am going to vote.
And did this make you? You're going to vote for Hillary. And finally, just because the issue was brought up by the last caller, which of us is more biased against Donald Trump, Todd Zwillick or me?
That's a great question. You know, I think you guys are both pretty unbiased in terms of what you say. I think you just keep to the facts. So I really appreciate it, guys.
That's a good place to leave it.
Tahir, thank you so much. And we'll have to come out there to Salt Lake City. The Takeaway is on the air in Salt Lake.
On KUER.
That's exactly right. Thanks so much to Tahir and to all of our callers this hour. 1-800-543 was how you could reach us. 242-5-4-3. And you can... if you want to weigh in on the conversation and be a part of the Takeaway program tomorrow, you can call 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll have lots more on the program tomorrow. Thanks to all. This has been Debate Rewind with John Huckenberry and my colleague,
Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent. It's been a pleasure to have you giving your say in this debate. We're going to be back with you for the vice presidential debate and the next two showdowns between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
What's that going to be like? I mean, what is that going to be like? I'm trying to think.
Now they've seen each other.
Is it going to be not just the same thing again?
No. You know, once you've seen somebody's fastball, you know it's coming. So then you got to go to the curve, right? It's going to be something a little different next time. But always remember, here's one thing to take away with you at the end of this debate. Barack Obama lost the first debate in 2012. He lost miserably to Mitt Romney. And Barack Obama was never heard from again after that loss, right? The first debate is not the end of this story.
No, that is true. That is very true. Well, we'll see what the various camps think, and there will be certainly plenty of spin for you to absorb. But be a part of our program, 877-8-MY-TAKE on The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry with Todd Zwillick. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, everybody.
This has been Debate Rewind. Tune in after each debate for more live call-in coverage, along with guests and analysis. And check out thetakeaway.org for more info.
PRI, Public Radio International.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.